situation. But you're talking about seven starters now, and then you get Blake Snell, which is tomorrow, which is a really nice thing.
Welcome to the Darren Smith Show.
This is the big one, boys. This is the one that brings us back.
Soon, AM radio will reign king once more.
Ooh, yeah. Now, here's Darren and Marty.
We love you. We love you forever and ever.
On Extra 1360.
Hour number three, Extra 1360 and the iHeartRadio app with you to 3 o'clock this afternoon. John and Jim taking over. Tomorrow, we'll talk to Kevin Acey, who will join us live from Philadelphia. It's expected that we'll speak with Padres closer Taylor Rogers for the very first time on radio. So looking forward to that. We had Mark Sweeney back in hour number one, joined us at 12:30. That's the voice that you just heard. Peacock baseball analyst Mark Sweeney joining us to recap his weekend in Atlanta, preview the series with the Phillies. And I hope everybody caught that. See, that was important commentary from Mark there. Mark was talking a little bit about Mackenzie Gore, his role. Still on the roster as of now. Don't think he's going anywhere. So, given that it's Clevinger today, who's pitched nine innings, who's coming back from a second Tommy John surgery, and then some lower body injury to boot, you get nine innings out of him as a starter so far. What he's capable of, sort of anybody's guess. I think there's a number there, like 90, somewhere in that range. So, Philly, small ballpark, right? Good hitting team. And then tomorrow, it's Snell, and like, who knows? Blake Snell isn't exactly known. He doesn't have a reputation for going late into any of these games anywhere in his career. Like, he just does not have that reputation. So when you think about it, what Mark Sweeney said there, and something we talked about off the air, and one of the more boring conversations that we have off the air on this show was, you know, Mark sort of laid it out for you there without really laying it out. Because you get an opportunity to meet with the manager, to meet with the coaching staff, to be around the club. So you learn a little thing or two. Not that you're going to go and divulge any sort of secrets out there on the air. But Mark might have been giving you some good insight into how the Padres are going to operate here, that you're going to have Clevinger, and then if you're going to see Gore, you're going to see him out of the bullpen, but you're going to see him not just for a couple of the batters. You might see him for a little bit of length. Mark mentioned the word, used the word piggybacking. Yes. So might you see some combination, let's say, of Gore piggybacking today or Nick Martinez piggybacking tomorrow or vice versa, or how it's going to work? I would tend to believe going back-to-back days with guys who you know, are not exactly cut from the Randy Jones school of pitching. They're not going deep into these games. It makes some sense that you're going to see these guys here over the next couple of days in a different role, and that you're going to see them not just for an inning, but you're going to see them lengthening out a little. Two innings, who knows, maybe three if they're cruising along. Why would you change it? It's not like their spot in the lineup's going to come up. You don't have to pinch hit. So this could be very interesting to see how this works out for the Padres, given that Snell is back. Given that Sweeney said that you are on seven now, that you're going to use a couple of these guys who have primarily and exclusively been starters, but you're going to see them in a different role. But it's a role where it's not just, okay, go out there and get the save in a high leverage eighth inning situation. It's going to be, this guy's probably good for four. This guy might be good for five, maybe. So we're going to need you to do six and seven. Maybe, you know, who knows? If you're cruising, you're cruising. Like, let's see what you got. But it certainly sounds like that's the expectation. From the more I listen to it, the more it sort of sounds like that's what we should expect over the next couple of days.
Yes, I think the term piggybacking had been used a while ago. It's been used frequently. I remember I had that conversation with Prowler briefly in the last homestand about what do you do when you have this, you know, nice problem to have. And I think piggybacking was like they really didn't know, but you could see that, especially with, you know, Blake Snell. You want to be cautious. Mike Clevinger, you're always going to be cautious, and you just don't know. Now, Snell's last outing
With all due respect here, I mean, we've also started hearing this in spring training.
Sure, okay. You know,
the idea that they were going to start piggybacking some of these guys.
Okay. So. Snell's last outing for El Paso, five innings, seven strikeouts. I'm not seeing what the pitch count was there, and I'm not sure what the pitch count's going to be for him tomorrow. Or where he's both up to, what, 70 pitches, 80 pitches? So that could be interesting.
Listen, the guy just doesn't have a reputation for going deep into games.
No.
You know, where he is in his recovery is almost irrelevant other than who he is at this point in his career, right? Like, because who he is just not a guy who's going to give you 100. It's what he came in with from the Tampa Bay Rays. It's just who he is, and there's no real reason to think he's going to be anything different. So this is a potential solution to all of that. That you do have these starters and you can convert them into longer relievers, but in better situations than some guy like a Luis Perdomo who goes out there and gives you four or five innings because your starter got bombed out in the first, right? So, you know, this is a different approach and this is a different strategy. And for as much as it's been discussed in spring training or through AJ Preller, it feels like that reality is now upon us here over the next couple of days in Philadelphia. So I find that to be kind of exciting. But that's just me. So they'll play coming up at 3:35 today. Tiger Woods had a press conference earlier.
Yes.
Felt like I was prematurely ending the Padre conversation.
No, there's no more. I feel like perhaps, Darren, we're going to be hit. We're headed towards your dream, which is a combined no-hitter one day. Like, that could happen.
Can't wait. The only thing better would be a no-hitter and a loss.
Yes, exactly. Anyways.
Oh, speaking of that, I feel really terrible about something I said on the air yesterday. And, you know, one of the things in this business is when you make a mistake, it's often said, just move on because everybody's got short memories. Nobody really cares. But I felt bad. I had yesterday we had Harold Reynolds on the show and I said something about Manny Machado never winning a Gold Glove Award. And I had Manny Machado's baseball reference page open right in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I was counting up the All-Stars and I was looking and I just screwed the whole thing up. And I screwed up Harold Reynolds when he was on the show. And I screwed up Marty because then Marty quoted that and tweeted that. And I know it's, you know, everybody moves on and short memories.
I know.
But I did. Like that one really irritated me when I got home last night. I didn't even really realize what I said. And I was looking at it. I was counting up the All-Stars. And I saw the two Gold Gloves in 2013 and 2015. And I said that to Harold Reynolds. And Harold's like, yeah, it's an outrage. And like I set everybody off in some weird direction because I got it sort of trapped into my brain and into my vocal cords. So anyway, Manny Machado's won two Gold Gloves. He should have more than that. Mm-hmm. He is the Minister of Defense, and that's kind of where I was going with that conversation. Thinking about MVP, Manny, popularity contests. Can he actually win it? And I got all screwed up, and I screwed up Harold and Marty in the process. So anyway, I got that one wrong, and I felt pretty bad about that, but we move on.
Now we're done with the baseball, and now we're going to finally go back to Tiger Woods's 27-minute commercial-free press conference today.
And also, if anybody has any questions, as I said, I'm available for any MLS-related stuff. There's still a couple of questions on the text line. So, you know, again, I have some thoughts, I have some opinions, and I have some information. So
okay, that's good.
If you can get to that at some point, I'm happy to tell you what it is that I know, as much as I'm capable of telling you. Somebody's asking me to name this billionaire that I heard of in town. All I can tell you is he's involved in one of the development projects in the Midway District. I've heard this name from three different people. He's involved in one of them. He's letting it be known. I'll wait for somebody else to do that legwork because I've not heard directly from this person, but this person has contacted others. I'm sure that Mark Ziegler was referring to this person. Mark also referred to a group of other billionaires who live in other markets who are sort of looking to invest money somewhere, which, you know, on the surface doesn't really sound all that appealing to me, but Major League Soccer sounds appealing to me, wherever it might be played. So you don't know what you don't know about any of these people. You just know that rich people tend to have conversations with other filthy rich people, and they want to know what it is that they can do with their money. So, you know, that came from that interview yesterday. You can find it at the iHeartRadio app. But Tiger spoke this morning. Tiger was asked for his thoughts about Phil Mickelson. Now, remember, Tiger Woods is a defending champ. Couldn't defend a title in a major, but that was due to injury. Mm-hmm. Mickelson, I suppose, his wound is self-inflicted here. Tiger was asked the first available cut of Phil not being there to defend his championship.
Well, Bob, I mean, it's always disappointing when the defending champion's not here. Phil has said some things that I think a lot of us who are committed to the tour and committed to the legacy of the tour have pushed back against, and he's taken some personal time, and we all understand that, but I think that some of his views on how the tour could be run, should be run. Been a lot of disagreement there. But as we all know, as a professional, we miss him being out here. I mean, he's a big draw for the game of golf. He's just taking his time, and you know, we all wish him the best when he comes back. Obviously, we're going to have difference of opinions that how he sees the tour, and we'll go from there.
Are you surprised at all it has escalated to the point that it has, where, you know, he also missed the Masters, obviously, and we really don't know what's next?
Yeah, it has ramped up very quickly, and I think we were talking about this, if this would have happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, it wouldn't have happened as fast, but social media has changed the landscape and how fast things can ramp up. Whether it's real news or fake news or whatever it is, opinions get out there instantly, and it can sway very quickly one way or the other. And what we're seeing right now in a society, it's very bipolar. There's really no middle ground. You stand one way or the other, and it's very polarizing. And the viewpoints that Phil has made, with the tour and what the tour has meant to all of us, has been polarizing as well.
Well, that's some interesting commentary from Tiger Woods, somebody who's been the discussion of much chatter on social media, somebody who probably has a bit of a binary public opinion. I think there are people who either really, really love Tiger Woods or can't stand Tiger Woods. I don't know that there's a lot of middle ground with Tiger where it's like, yeah, he's okay. Right? I mean, most people either love him or hate him. I think you know how I feel. I don't, the human being himself is what he is. I just like watching the guy play golf. But I understand that there's a lot of people who just don't want anything to do with him. They don't like that we talk about him. They don't like that we put him up on some sort of sports pedestal. But I understand that side too. That's just not me. But that's an interesting piece of commentary at the end of that, as he sort of steered down a different side street here. He was asked if Phil needs to resolve his disagreement with the tour. I mean, does Phil need to reach out? Does there need to be some sort of compromise here between Phil and the PGA Tour?
I don't know if he has to resolve it or not. He has his opinion on where he sees the game of golf going. I have my viewpoint on how I see the game of golf, and I've supported the tour, and my foundation has run events on the tour for a number of years. And I just think that what Jack and Arnold have done in starting the tour and breaking away from the PGA of America and creating our tour, in 68 or 69, somewhere in there, I just think that there's a legacy to that. I've been playing out here for a number of years, for over a couple of decades, and I think there's a legacy to it. And I still think that what the tour has so much to offer, so much opportunity. Yes, it is. I understand different viewpoints, but I believe in legacies. I believe in major championships. I believe in big events, comparisons to historical figures of the past. And it's, there's plenty of money out here. The tour is growing. But it's just like any other sports, like tennis. You got to go out there and earn it. You got to go out there and play for it. We have the opportunity to go ahead and do it. It's just not guaranteed up front.
All right. Jay Riff getting some email here in the middle of that Tiger Woods soundbite. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. That's what matters to Tiger.
Legacy.
And I suppose it matters to Phil. It just doesn't matter as much to Phil if he can go get $25 million for showing up at some Saudi state-sponsored event,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's sort of what it is. I'm sure this stuff matters on some level to Phil,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't matter as much if I can go. And, who knows what the other stuff that's been written about Phil, the gambling losses. I mean, wait till the Billy Walters book comes out. That's expected. You think this stuff that you're hearing now from Alan Shipnuck, this unauthorized biography, which Marty just said was
books
released
out
today. What interesting timing.
I really
is. And if you think this stuff has been juicy, I mean, I would imagine the Billy Walters pro gambler stuff is going to take it to a completely different level.
That's what next year, writing it with Armin Katayan.
With Armin Katayan.
Yes.
Not exactly a tabloid journalist there.
No.
Armin Katayan, who wrote about a 500-page book on Tiger Woods.
That's true. That's right. That's very good.
Yeah, who also went to San Diego State.
He most certainly did.
Journalism school over there.
Mm-hmm.
Paving the way for Marty Caswell.
That's exactly it.
I'm sure Armin knows where the library is there. last one we'll hear from Tiger is if he's reached out to Phil.
By the way,
those questions that were asked Bob Herrick, who was on the show yesterday.
Yes. Very good. And that's fascinating, this next one, because the reporter said, you know, that Phil, we know that Phil reached out to you during all your hard times. And Tiger's had all years of that. And so I thought this question and the answer was fascinating. He asked
just one follow on Phil. In sometimes you've endured some difficult times over the years. Phil has publicly and privately reached out to you. I'm curious if you have tried to reach out to him, spoken to him, and if you felt compelled to reach out to him at all.
I have not reached out to him. I've not spoken to him. A lot of it has not to do with, I think, personal issues. It was our viewpoints of how the tour should be run and could be run, and what players are playing for and how we're playing for it. I have a completely different stance on that. And so, no, I have not. I don't know what he's going through, but I know the comments he made about the tour and the way that it should be run. It could be run differently, and all the different financials that could have happened. I just have a very different opinion on that. And so, no, I have not reached out to him.
All right. I mean, that's part of it. You know what he said about the PGA Tour. I don't know. Phil Mickelson to me has become filthy rich because of his abilities to play some golf. So okay, maybe he wants to make things better for a different generation of pro golfers, and so be it. But to me, that's not any of this. That's not what any of this is all about. If he's got some issues with the way that he should use NFTs on the PGA Tour, like, I don't really even care about that, because everybody seems, especially him, seems to have become filthy rich as a result of him playing golf. I think the problem for most of us, speaking for me, I should only speak for me. The problem is, and you're like, yeah, you know, they cut up a journalist and they've got some views on homosexuality there. You know, you can get killed for that sort of stuff. But, you know, they're willing to pay lots of money. I think that's probably whatever term it is you want to use about this, funding this tour, whether it's sports washing or whether it's money laundering. You know, and it's tricky here, right? Like, it's tricky for me because it wasn't that long ago that we interviewed my friend Sean Kelly. Where was he? He was in Saudi Arabia. You know, I support a club. I'm wearing a Barcelona shirt now. Barcelona, the league that Barcelona plays in, La Liga, just agreed to have a preseason cup tournament in Saudi Arabia. So it's sort of a tricky thing. Steve Sands brought it up, that the PGA Tour gave exemptions to some of its players to go play a one-off event in Saudi Arabia. And I do think that this is true. I'll get clobbered for this, but that's fine. I do think there is something. Yes, of course, everybody's trying to make a lot of money because there's a lot of money there, and there's lots of money there. There's lots of money in China. There's lots of money in places that, you know, you wouldn't really want to go and set up shop necessarily. But I do think there is something. I do think there is something to the very perhaps naive at times thought that, you know, you can influence some of these countries that are operated the way they're operated, that you can influence them with Western example, that you know, basketball culture, sports culture from the United States, you know, not that we need to be empirical, but that you can, that people can see that sort of stuff, and you know, that can certainly you know, that could inspire change in some of these places. I do believe that because I've been there. I've been to China and I saw it. And I saw what the impact was of basketball, that you had basketball courts on all these other corners. Now, again, like, it doesn't mean you have to bend over. You know, that's the sort of thing that happens. You know, I think some of the comments from what was going on with the NBA in Beijing were terrible. That said, I understand somebody, you know, thinking that this is a good idea based on Western influence, based on bringing that sort of culture, bringing that sort of thing there and allowing people to learn from it, to be inspired by it, to be influenced by it. I do believe in that sort of naively, but I also don't think that that's what this is about at all. I don't, you know. So, I mean, I don't think that's really what F1 was doing over there. I don't really think that's what La Liga is doing over there. I don't know that that's what the Saudi golf tournament's doing over there. So, you know, you can hide behind that sort of stuff, hide behind some of the tours from baseball and the NBA and the NFL going into China. You know, what it ultimately is that's a billion people there, and that's a lot of money. But there is, that, I mean, the other part doesn't make it untrue. Doesn't make it untrue either. But, you know, that's not this. But that's not this. I mean, that's, you know, to me, I don't care what Phil says about the tour. Tour's made him an insane amount of money. It's like, to me, him complaining, you know, there's never been a more Phil Mickelson line ever in the history of Phil Mickelson than when he was asked why he was defending the Chargers relocating out of San Diego. And his response was, do you remember? Have you ever been in the luxury suites at Qualcomm Stadium? Phil. I mean, you're just not, like, you just are out of touch. You have become filthy rich playing this sport, and it just comes across as insulting.
Probably one of the most out of touch superstar athletes that we've ever come across.
You guys ever been in a luxury suite at Qualcomm? I've been in these other luxury suites at other NFL places, and it just,
you know. Do you know how dirty it makes my shoes before I step on my private jet?
I mean, I had to wait for the valet. This is just an outrage here. They only had barbecue and ranch. Everybody knows I'm a honey mustard. You know, so it's just like, Phil, everybody rolls your eyes. Everybody rolls their eyes at you when you say this stuff. But when you start going, whatever. Yeah, that whole bone saw to the journalist thing, whatever. Like, it's just a way for me to get filthy rich. Now, maybe there's also a level of desperation here based on some of the stuff that we continue to read about him and his finances. But, you know, I'm not really qualified to talk about that either. Coming up, we'll read more of your texts. We'll find
the possum in the Oakland Coliseum in the press box. Who are they playing yesterday? And the visiting team? Oh, the Twins.
It was 2 days ago. The first images of the possum, or is it an opossum?
I thought it was an opossum, but the Twins broadcaster had to like evacuate the booth.
It's kind of cute
because an exterminator had to get rid of the possum.
People swear these things are friendly and that they're pet friendly and that they're not going to be any threat whatsoever to your household pet, to your dogs, to your cats. We had one out in the bushes. I don't want any part of it, man. I just don't want any part of it. You can tell me how friendly they are. Maybe they make great pets, but it's not going to be me. Ain't going to be me.
When you say attacked by a skunk, you mean getting sprayed by one.
I don't even care.
That's really the only way to get attacked by a skunk. Marty said she'd rather get attacked by
a skunk.
Skunks
are cute too, by the way.
Apparently, they make great pets if you can just de-stink them.
Is that a thing?
I think it is.
I think you can. Yeah, I think there's a way to do it.
Unstink your skunk?
I don't know how. Like, where would you take a skunk? Would you take it to the vet? I don't know how you would do that. I don't even know that that's accurate. It's just one of those things you sort of hear and you just repeat and you never really think to investigate it. But I'd rather get attacked by a possum.
My dog got sprayed by a skunk back in the day, and it took like 4 days to get the smell off.
It's not great.
No.
It's just not great. But something about the way the face of that opossum, something about its face to me just creeps me out, man.
The teeth. Now, since they're not dangerous.
And it has like the type of shark teeth, too. It has those two rows of teeth, so it has a front row. I don't know what that's called exactly, but
this
I did some recent reading on this to find out if this was accurate.
Opossums are not aggressive. Their open mouth defensive hissing is merely a bluff
to
look vicious, but they do carry like terrible diseases, like bacteria,
I don't want any part of it.
Things like that. Okay.
I just don't.
All right.
But if given a choice, I think I'd rather take my chances with the possum than the skunk.
Completely. Skunk's projectile. Like, that's a projectile attack.
I agree. The hissing thing, it's creepy, but...
You'll hiss back.
You hiss back a little bit. So, I don't know. I think, Marty, I probably disagree.
Okay.
This is first take, everybody. 609 number texts in. Bad Bunny D. Smith, he's like the current version of Elvis Presley, and everybody around you at 1360 just has no clue. You're the only one. D. Smith knows what's up. His music is played a lot at the Hong Kong Club.
What do you mean everyone has no clue about it? What are you talking about?
You didn't get to the punchline there.
Very sensual.
Yeah. 858 Mickelson, one of the nicest people at Torrey Pines, signing autographs. He would sign for hours. What the heck happened? Did gambling turn you sour so quickly?
He would? When was this?
I think he was always a crowd favorite. I do tend to think that sometimes we in media, you know, the conversation with Phil and his representative always stuck with me about, you know, Phil's just not interested in local media. And it's like, okay, it's fine. I don't know what the big deal would be. He could be a hero, like a Charlie Hoffman type or a Xander type, but you know, Phil just never had any interest in it whatsoever. I don't think that colors my opinion of Phil at all. Phil's always been a bit of a goofball. He said some unfortunate things. He sticks his foot in his mouth on a regular basis, but you know, this is just to a totally different level. And it's not us. I mean, obviously the tour feels a certain way about him. So do some of his contemporaries. 609 just shows where we are in society when somebody slams Mickelson for being a, quote, bad guy, end quote, but in the same breath, ball washes for Tiger Woods.
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
I think everybody acknowledges Tiger's a very flawed human being.
I think Tiger acknowledges he's a flawed human being.
He's been incredibly flawed. Nobody's sitting telling you that Tiger Woods should be nominated for, you know, a Distinguished Citizen Award, but like, he also hasn't defended the dismemberment of journalists either, to my knowledge. Sorry.
If Phil didn't do that, is that the one specific thing that makes Phil, quote, a bad guy? Because other than that, like, yeah, he speaks his opinions and he's a lot, you may disagree with them. That's make him, he might be a a-hole when it comes to signing autographs and speaking to fans, but that's make him a bad guy.
No, I think this was a compliment to Phil that he was nice about signing autographs.
Right. No,
but I also think there's other stuff there. If you really want to read about Mickelson and how much some of this stuff was swept under the rug, you know, about, I want to make sure I get this right. You know, he has been penalized by the IRS. He's been penalized. You know, there was an insider trading accusation which went quite far. You know, like there's been more to this. And I also think that there's a lot of things that are often known about Phil Mickelson that maybe would, you know, paint him in a little bit of a different, with a different brush than he's been.
So is he a bad guy or is he a flawed human being who's been caught in a bad situation?
I don't know. I don't know enough about him to know if he's a bad guy or not. I really don't. I mean, if you are the company that you keep, then, you know, you can draw your own conclusions about that. But, you know, it's not just about being greedy and saying stupid stuff. I think that there's other stuff there. Like, there's legitimately other stuff there that's happened with Mickelson that never, ever gets mentioned. Never gets mentioned. We know all about Tiger Woods driving drunk, crashing a car, having a flat tire, being on prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Cheating on his side. Like, we know all about that sort of stuff, and it gets brought up a lot about Tiger. But some of that stuff, some of the missteps that Phil has taken, and I'm not just talking about sticking his foot in his mouth, some of the legal stuff with Mickelson never gets talked about.
There's been like a, he has personified some, like a whole, there's been like a wholesome image attached to him for a lot of fans. And I just think, and I think the media has known about this for so many years. And I think that now it's really coming out, especially with the Shipnuck stuff, and I guess the Billy Walters book coming out next year.
Yeah,
I think
it feels like it's an avalanche of stuff with Phil.
Yeah, which makes me think it's just not going to happen.
I'm not going to be the verdict on this. You know, that's up to you guys. I don't do that. I don't try to play that role of telling you who is or isn't a bad guy. I really object to him talking about the dismemberment of a journalist in a consulate and, you know, just brushing over that. I'm sorry. I just do. 609, forget about those crybabies who haven't finished Ozark. Give them a heads up. Change the station. I want to know Marty's questions about the ending. Yeah, it's probably not a great strategy for us to say, all right, everybody, go ahead and change the station.
Okay, tomorrow. Okay, right now.
I appreciate the selfishness.
Tomorrow at 1:15, we're going to discuss the ending.
It on a podcast and let people listen when they want to listen.
Because we don't have time.
We have plenty of time. It's 10
You don't
minutes.
Have time.
It's I have time. No, I will commit to it at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I'll say, yeah, just record it beforehand when you both get in here.
Guys, it's been 3 weeks.
Plus, we can curse.
It's been 3 weeks.
If we have one listener that doesn't want us to do it, that's enough for me.
Come on. It's been 3 weeks.
619, happy Congress talking UFO UAP Serious Day. Taking UFO and UAP Serious Day. Believe it or not, that's the segment tonight coming up on Darren and Jack.
Really? Who do you have booked for that? Who's breaking it down?
Andrew Dyer of the Union Tribune.
Okay.
Who watched this entire hearing today and live tweeted it?
Do you believe in UFOs?
I do.
You do? You really do?
I do.
So Marty, you don't then, based on that response?
I don't think I know enough about it, but if you're forcing me into do I or don't I would say that I do.
Yeah, gun to your head. Okay.
Yeah, like in the binary sports universe that we all live in, where it's either going to be this or that. I think the answer is probably
no
yes.
There's no gray area to this question.
I'm going
to
say no.
They're also not called UFOs. They're called UAPs, by the way.
Do you believe in them?
I 100%.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Are you freaked out by them?
No.
I'm not either.
Huh.
I'm not freaked out by them.
But Marty, do you believe in extraterrestrial life elsewhere?
No.
Really?
Mm-mm.
We're the only life form in the universe?
Yes. What? What are you laughing at me for? What do you know?
I don't know anything. Okay, I find that hard to believe.
That was kind of a condescending laugh. Like, idiot.
No.
Anytime I judge,
there's no evidence of life.
I'm wrong. So,
well, there's no evidence that anything actually.
Then why are you so shocked by my answer? Like, right? There's no evidence. So no, I don't.
Why not?
Just we would have found it by now.
Do you believe in dinosaurs,
I don't believe
Kyrie?
That. I hate that answer.
Oh, dinosaurs, 100%. Absolutely.
You do believe we landed on the moon?
Yes, I saw the movie, Darren.
Do you believe in chemtrails?
In what?
Okay, if you don't know what it is, then you don't believe in it. You're good.
There's something. Here's something going on here. Okay, all right.
That's the judgment. It's not over here. Okay. We're past that. No, I'm not mocking you at all. I don't know that there's evidence to suggest that there's life out there.
We're the evidence.
Beyond.
There's no way that this one small place in an infinite T universe is, we're the anomaly. There's just right. No way.
7-6-0, the EFL playoffs have been very good. Nottingham Forest was in the driver's seat to go up against Huddersfield in the final until they blew it against Sheffield United. It's extra time right now. I just watched the end of that. I don't want to be a spoiler for anybody that's recording this match, but Nottingham Forest in penalties over Sheffield United. There you go. All right, I guess that's a wrap for the day.
Good luck, Darren.
With?
The draft.
Yes.
The 2% chance.
2%.
2%.
I thought you meant good luck with our interview tonight.
Yeah, good luck with that too.
Talking about UAPs, unexplained aerial phenomena. Not UFOs, you know. It's not the military terminology that they use, and mm-hmm. I want to be accurate on Kogo, since I get everything wrong here. By the way, I don't know why I bothered trying to link together all the stuff that Sweeney had to say when I could have just read a tweet from Kevin Acey. Talked to the manager today mm-hmm. and tweeted out the exact plan for what would happen over the next couple of days. We're like, wow, either today Mackenzie Gore's going to piggyback Clev or tomorrow and Nick Martinez. Kevin Acey, Mackenzie Gore will pitch after Mike Clevenger tonight, and tomorrow the plan is for Nick Martinez to follow Blake Snell. We'll almost certainly have Gore and Martinez begin an inning, won't have them enter with anybody on, so there could be a bridge reliever if Clevenger or Snell doesn't finish an inning clean. So there you go. I don't know why I bothered talking about that stuff. Right. I should have just scrolled through AC's Twitter.
So the alternate headline, Mike Clevenger, Blake Snell are the Padres openers.
There you go. Right? Yeah, it took me an hour and a half to figure out what Sweeney was talking about, but I finally got there.
Just
in time to simultaneously say what it was that Kevin Acey was tweeting as fact and reporting.
Exciting.
Television tonight, Eastern Conference Finals. Jay Riff, what's your prediction?
Miami wins game one. Celtics win the next three.
Wow. No bias there.
Celtics are a better team, but they're coming off a seven-game series where they're playing every other day.
Right.
Miami's rest is going to benefit them in this game.
But only this game.
So what happens after 3-1?
What do you mean what happens after 3-1?
You said...
I think the Celtics will win in five, but it could go to six.
That was a weird prediction, because you're like, the Heat will win game one, then the Celtics will win the next three.
Oh, so you sort of left me on the edge of my seat. Four.
Okay.
I think the Heat, they could push it to six. The Celtics team is just so much better. Sorry.
ESPN analysts are overwhelmingly picking the Celtics in six. I think that's probably right. But I'm going to be pulling for the Heat. Marty, who's your pick?
The Heat.
5:30 ESPN. Kyle Lowry's out. Pods and Phils, 3:45 on Harry's, it says here. Strohs and Sox on TBS. 8 Mile, 7 o'clock on VH1.
That's your Bob Costas game, right?
Ah, man. Not good enough.
I love Costas.
Casino, 9 o'clock on SZEN.
Such a disturbing movie.
I got an amazing idea. One day you should take over the Nick Canepa column on Sundays.
Why?
You've got some Canepa vibes to you.
What? I have broadcasters I'm attached to.
The Dark Knight, 10 o'clock on True TV. If only I was one of those broadcasters.
Says me.
Says Marty.
Yeah.
Be great. Be a terrific columnist. Mm-hmm. You can also take over the Charger report card.
Is that still... Okay.
Maybe next year Marty comes in this color for San Diego State Baseball with me.
Arts. Warning. Warning.
Roger, ignition engaged. The countdown is on.
3, 2, 1.
It's time for The Fusion.
John and Jim, they're coming up here at the top of the hour. Extra 1360 has chances for you to win $1,000 every weekday. Listen for the keyword. Enter it at sportssd.com for your chance to win. John Schaefer, Jim Russell, between 3 and 6 o'clock. Padres starting at about 3:45 today. So you guys have about a 45-minute window to preview the Padres and the Philadelphia Phillies.
Piggyback. Sorry, I had to do it.
Yeah, Marty said we shouldn't say it the whole show.
No, made it to about, what is it, 251?
Technically, it hasn't started
That's
yet,
true. So I can say as much as I want.
Get it out of the way, though.
Piggyback.
You'll have first crack
at
this.
Oh, yeah.
First bite at the apple.
Yes.
Update, top of the hour.
Piggyback day.
Piggybacking today and tomorrow. We're piggybacking through the city of brotherly love.
Yep.
It's cool. I'm on board. Whatever results in two wins in three games, I'm on board with.
So just that's it? Just two out of three?
Just keep winning two out of three,
man,
I think.
Man, you're a pessimist.
Is that a pessimist to win two out of three on the
Typical
road?
Typical John Schaefer, glass half empty.
Yeah, two
out of three. That would suck.
100 wins. Don't like that.
Typical. Yeah, I like it. We weren't sure early because we had Sweeney on, and he sort of said, like, this is... So we were fumbling around trying to figure it out. Little did we know on social media, Kevin Acey gave away the whole game plan.
Exactly. Everything that anyone wants to know from the Philly standpoint, follow Kevin Acey on Twitter.
Right, yeah. So Clevenger into Gore, tomorrow, Snell, most likely into Nick Martinez.
Are you saving innings with Gore if you're piggybacking him behind him, Mike Clevenger?
Like, absolutely. It's very smart.
How do you feel about...
Right,
piggybacking.
I'm doing the math. I mean, let's say he threw three innings here tonight. But is he going to throw every fifth day as a piggybacker, as opposed to every 6 day as a starter?
It's a great question, John.
You know, so if he's throwing every fifth day and he's throwing three plus innings, and he's throwing every 6 day, he's throwing five innings. You do the math on it, saving an inning.
Well, here's the thing: you don't have to piggyback with your other relievers, though.
Right.
Or I'm sorry, with your other starters.
You
don't have to do this with Musgrove. You don't have to do this with
Naya. Darvish.
And I don't think you have to do this with Darvish.
Right.
So, you know, I do think that there's a case that you have to think along these lines when it's Clevenger and Snell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I buy that with Clevenger and Snell. I'm just wondering, at the end of the year, is Mackenzie Gore going to be piggybacking just one turn through the rotation, or will he be back in the rotation after this one turn? Or is this because Clevenger and Snell can't go a lot of innings? They need to be piggybacked for a significant period of time. And what does that mean for Gore's innings? And I think at the end of the day, whatever the number of innings they have for Mackenzie Gore, I would try to use them as a starter. That would be my preference. I think he's looked good as a starter. I wouldn't mess with something that's looked good. If you want to save innings, completely get it. That makes sense to me. Maybe just skip a turn of the rotation. You throw him in relief and you keep him there for a while and you make him a starter. It's like, I would prefer one as opposed to
both. Would you skip him, though? Would you skip him by taking him off the 26-man? Because then you're starting two guys who you know you're probably going to need a bullpen squad.
Right. And the problem with that, see, that's an excellent point and question, is last year you could do that and put pitchers on 10-day ILs. And now whatever the date is, later in May, there's no 10-day IL.
Right.
It's 15 days. So when you take someone off, he's off for a while. So you can't manipulate like they did last year with the 10 days. It's really 15 days. So I don't know if there's an easy answer. I just don't know how many innings they expect him to pitch. But if he's going to pitch in the postseason for this team, then they need to think about this like today, obviously, not tomorrow. And maybe they are by using him in relief.
If they're going, I'm sorry, one more time.
If they're going to be using him in the postseason.
Oh, right.
I mean, so then I don't know if they're going to do the regular season.
That's a long ways away.
Yeah.
Well, not according to you. It's like Friday, right?
Well, yes. Yeah.
Friday's game one.
Well, did you hear this earlier?
I did not.
So I sort of woke up. I was looking at the starters for the series, and I saw Clevenger, Snell, and Darvish. I went, yeah, that's pretty good.
Who's starting game one?
And then I started thinking, like, how would you structure this if you were starting some sort of postseason series coming up this weekend, which, again, is sort of like a silly radio bit. But I was like, Musgrove won, and then, like, Manaea Darvish? Like, what would it be? Like, I'm not even sure, like...
Right?
Like...
Got some options, that's for sure. You got a lot of options.
I think you can make a case for Gore, like this week, if you had to.
Yeah, I agree.
So what happens when things don't go according to plan? Like, say...
Yeah, what if someone goes an inning and a third?
Yeah, an inning and a third, and the guy you bring in goes another inning and a third. Now you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Well, or what if Clevenger, I mean...
Goes
six or seven. You're not going to use Gore. I know, I know. I'm just throwing it out
there.
Though,
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't even...
I mean, more likely than Snell.
100%, yeah. Snell is a four-inning max.
Are either of those two going six or seven in Philadelphia
probably
this week? You know, against that lineup?
Odds are against it.
Right.
Very, the magic game.
Very slip. Yeah. Which is still frustrating to me. Like, can Snell maybe want, like, just
be
pitch
efficiently,
please? And not nibble every single outing, it feels like. Now, granted, we haven't seen him this year, so maybe he's different than last year, but I wouldn't put my money on it right now, would you?
Well, I mean, I don't even think it's last year. I just think it's sort of what his career is.
Yep.
You know,
five innings.
His career is less than 5 innings per start.
Yep.
So.
He said he's going to be dominant, though. So
of course, he says this all the time.
Yeah.
But just do it.
Right.
Fine. Great. Say it. But not like do it.
Exactly. If you're going to talk the talk, walk the walk.
There you go. That's Jim Russell, everybody.
Yeah.
Piggyback. I'm with him.
Piggyback. Yesterday.
I was listening while I was getting gas at Costco in the 5 o'clock hour.
Blasted it out of your Jeep.
Was blasting
it out
of the Jeep.
All the way up, like top of the.
Yeah, everybody around. Like, what is he listening to?
Man.
What are these dorks talking about?
That JD Wicker in high definition? It sounds good, right?
I hope you guys had a chance to hear what I said earlier today. I think it's, you know, it's an important element to it. So good job, though. Way to advance the story with JD and with Mr. Ziegler. Back, coming up, top of the hour.